Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepinchik. On today's show, we'll feature a truth track, an audio documentary which hopes to rock hard as it seeks to inform, educate, and inspire. This week's truth track is entitled Chicago Protest Against Imperialism in Iraq, a Capsule History. We'll also include a summary of news about media and democracy entitled Media Minutes. But first, let's hear these news briefs courtesy of The New Standard. Bush gives a top wildlife protection job to a trophy hunter. Navy SEALs sue over the publication of Iraq abuse photos. Medicare is slated to become insolvent at least 20 years before Social Security. A judge orders a Hispanic mother to learn English or surrender custody of her child. And couples defend same-sex benefits against Michigan's Attorney General. The Bush administration has named a trophy hunting advocate to serve as acting director of the department charged with protecting the nation's wildlife. U.S. Department of the Interior Secretary Gail Norton announced on March 16, 2005, that Matthew J. Hogan, who formerly served as deputy director of the agency, will temporarily head the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in the wake of the current director's resignation. The United States Humane Society, the nation's largest animal protection organization, blasted the announcement, pointing out that in the past, Hogan was head lobbyist for Safari Club International, an extreme gaming group whose members hunt rare animals across the globe. Hogan will direct the agency until Bush nominates and Congress approves a permanent replacement. A group of Navy SEALs is claiming its members' lives have been endangered by the publication of photos that show them posing with Iraqi detainees who appeared beaten and bloodied. Five SEALs and the wife of one, who initially posted the pictures taken by her husband on a photo-sharing website, are suing the Associated Press for publishing some of the photos after one of its San Diego-based reporters discovered them while surfing the internet. According to Reuters, the suit claims that the AP reporter took the photos from a, quote, private album, unquote, without permission, and that publication of the images constitutes an invasion of privacy and copyright infringement, as well as endangering the lives and careers of the SEALs. Commenting about the lawsuit, an attorney for the AP said, quote, the pictures are of obvious public interest. AP obtained them in a completely proper way and was right to publish them, unquote. An attorney representing the SEALs said the photos did not depict evidence of illegal detainee abuse. Numbers released on March 23, 2005 by the administrators of the Medicare Trust Fund predict that the healthcare program will begin running a deficit as early as 2020. Though the forecast is 1 year more optimistic than the last annual report, it portrays the program's potential funding shortfalls as much more severe than those of the Social Security system, which is expected to be fully funded until at least 2041 by the government's most conservative estimates. As a result of the looming insolvency, the Medicare trustees predicted that the out-of-pocket health care costs for seniors and people with disabilities covered by the program will again increase as early as 2006. The release of the new numbers prompted fresh calls for the government to control the cost of health care, which has been steadily rising and is driven by private companies. A Hispanic woman who was ordered by a Tennessee judge to learn English within 6 months or permanently lose custody of her child is fighting the order with the help of one of the nation's oldest civil rights organizations. The Southern Poverty Law Center has stepped in to help the woman by representing her for free. According to the center, the court placed the woman's 11-year-old daughter in foster care after allegations of neglect. Though the single mother from Oaxaca, Mexico, asked the court for counseling, Judge Barry Tatum told her she had 6 months to learn to speak English at the fourth grade level. 41 same-sex couples in Michigan are fighting to preserve their health benefits in the wake of a new state amendment banning same-sex marriage. While the amendment does not specifically address the issue of same-sex partner benefits, Michigan Attorney General Mike Cox recently issued a legal interpretation stating that he believes the marriage ban prohibits government agencies from granting health benefits to the same-sex partners of their employees. With the help of the American Civil Liberties Union, 41 couples are challenging Cox's interpretation in court, stating that Michigan voters chose to ban same-sex marriage in order to protect the supposed sanctity of marriage, and not because of, quote, any malevolent desire to strip families of health insurance or job benefits, unquote. These brief reports come to us courtesy of The New Standard. We encourage you to support independent, nonprofit, anti-commercial news sources like The New Standard. On the web at newstandardnews.net. You're listening to The Ministry of Truth.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
Next month, a round of discussions will take place on how to balance global protection of intellectual property with universal freedom of information. Such a task falls to the World Intellectual Property Organization, a UN-sponsored agency. Unfortunately, all too often, many of these discussions mirror neoliberal economic strategies. The same trend seems to be taking place here. At the April talks, which will involve representatives of more than 180 countries, advocates for the public interest, for the most part, will not be allowed a seat at the table. The Electronic Frontier Foundation says this is problematic because any discussions that do take place will be subsequently skewed toward the perspectives of media industries and other private interests who make their money off the trade of information. Currently, the World Intellectual Property Organization is evaluating how copyright and patent laws affect developing countries. The EFF says without adequate public representation in this discussion, the agency's conclusions may end up favoring big businesses' penchant for restrictions on knowledge sharing over the public tendency to open information flows.
A big push is on to make mainstream America news coverage look more like America. A strategic plan released by Unity Journalists of Color seeks to raise the proportion of non-white journalists in newsrooms to 20% by 2008. Unity is a coalition of the Native American Journalists Association, Asian American Journalists Association, National Association of Black Journalists, and National Association of Hispanic Journalists, which collectively represent more than 10,000 working reporters, editors, and news managers. Executive Director Anna Lopez says their research into newsroom diversity reports a glaring whiteness to news coverage.
We worked with the University of Maryland looking at the census at the Washington Press Corps and the lack of diversity in the Washington Press Corps in this country. And that's where we started our research, and that's where we're going to be focusing, is really looking at retention issues, at what we need to do to better help the industry recruit and retain people of color.
Currently, only 10% of an average newsroom is non-white, although people of color make up one-third of the U.S. population. Lopez says the 20% goal is an ambitious one, but it's better to set sights too high than too low.
We wanted to make it a challenge because if we don't challenge ourselves, who else, you know, can we hold accountable?
Lopez says Unity will put pressure on mainstream outlets for more diversity in staffing.
Really holding the industry accountable for what it does, from its coverage of various issues to the people that they're hiring, both in the newsroom as well as in management, affect the news coverage of this country.
Unity's strategic plan calls for more research into FCC policymaking on issues of media ownership and consolidation and its impact on staffing diversity. And the group also hopes to host a presidential debate in the 2008 election cycle.
So much for outlawing spam. In 2004, the federal government implemented a new law which, it was claimed, would stem the flood of junk email filling up people's inboxes. But a bulk review of email traffic tells a different story. Before the Can Spam Act became law, 50 to 60% of all email involved spam traffic. Now, at least 80% of all email is spam. A survey conducted at Stanford University suggests the average American internet user spends about 80 hours every year deleting spam, and that junk email costs the country $17 billion every year in lost productivity and network maintenance costs. And now, here's a Media Minutes Fast Fact. 2004 was a very good year for TV broadcast networks. Collectively, they grossed $11.7 billion in advertising revenue. That's an increase of more than 12% from 2003. The elections and Olympics are credited with driving the rise in ad spending. Outside the political realm, the largest advertisers were the automotive, credit card, and pharmaceutical industries. Looking at overall ad budgets, though, the three biggest spenders were Procter & Gamble, General Motors, and Daimler Chrysler. They spent a combined $7.4 billion. Most forms of media saw an increase in ad revenue for 2004, with the lone exception of radio, which experienced a small decline. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
The major record labels say that downloading their music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show. When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. When an MC rhymes over a sampled beat, that's stealing. Have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant? Watch out, Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? And stop giving them your money. Don't pay for major label music, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Even better, burn them CDs of the music they like, so they won't even want to buy it. If we pull the plug on the major labels, music gets better. To find out more about what you can do, check out downhillbattle.org.
This is the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepinchik. We now feature a truth track, an audio documentary which hopes to rock hard as it seeks to inform, educate, and inspire. This week's truth track is entitled Chicago Protest Against Imperialism in Iraq, a Capsule History. In March 2003, the United States invaded Iraq. But certainly not everyone in the United States participated in the invasion, or even agreed with it. On the contrary, in the months before the war, in the days when war was officially declared, and in the subsequent years when war became occupation, many Americans openly objected to George W. Bush's decision to launch a war against Iraq for what amounted to non-reasons. Chicago, the third most populous city in the United States, was a major epicenter of public objection to the war. On February 15, 2003, tens of millions of people worldwide participated in the largest coordinated anti-war protest in history, even before the war became official. Some 7,000 Chicago protesters gathered in the bitter winter cold on Devon Avenue on Chicago's north side. The war-making machine nevertheless continued, but organizing and protest also continued. The Chicago City Council even approved a resolution against the war. The chorus of protests reached their crescendo on March 20, 2003, the day after the U.S. officially declared war against Iraq. Emergency protests crisscrossed the globe. Chicagoans took part by taking to the streets in a protest that would make history. About 17,000 protesters peacefully marched with police permission on Lakeshore Drive, a six-lane highway adjacent to downtown Chicago. After the march, protesters expected to march down the high-class shopping district of Michigan Avenue, but the police forced a standoff at the intersection of Michigan and Oak. Then police responded with violence and with mass arrests, even arresting passers-by who had nothing to do with the protest. In all, some 860 people were arrested, more than in the famous 1968 Chicago protests against the Democratic National Convention. The intimidation didn't work. A follow-up march on March 21st, 2003, attracted even more protesters than the day before. Protesters even began pursuing a class-action lawsuit against the police and the city of Chicago, which still continues. Meanwhile, the war became an occupation, and a resistance in Iraq raised the costs of the ordeal and the skepticism of everyday Americans. Amid this climate, on March 20th, 2004, on the first anniversary of the Lakeshore Drive protest, Chicago protesters again assembled in the thousands at Michigan and Oak to finish the march stopped a year earlier by the police. Now the struggle against the war extended to the struggle for free speech rights and civil liberties, as the city of Chicago and Chicago Mayor Daley, hoping to win Homeland Security funds for the city budget, now strove mightily to quell any large-scale dissent in Chicago. The city refused to grant a permit for a 2004 peace march down Michigan Avenue, and police threatened arrests and even deemed the entire gathering illegal. A standoff between protesters and police led to a forced march rerouting away from high-profile Michigan Avenue to low-profile Clark Street. Meanwhile, the occupation in Iraq continued, and the quagmire would increase the cost to the United States in dollars and in lives. You're listening to the Ministry of Truth.